reserve some time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, 7 minutes.
7 minutes.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Hold on 1 second. Let's let the clerk get back to the control panel. 7 minutes, yes. Okay, go ahead, please.
Okay. Good morning, Your Honors. Andrew Smith for the appellant, if it please the court. Assuming, just for argument and only at the beginning of my argument, that Pelley is correct and that if there's an order to vacate, and I understand an order to vacate is a bit different than a, you know, order of right for possession. In some cases say it's a tort, but assuming all that's correct, and assuming that, which is really, I'm going to really not assume later, that when you don't immediately obey the order, you don't vacate immediately, now you've done some tort and those holdover damages are damages. So assume all that's true, then the question comes up, when was the first proper order to vacate? When was the first order that was executable and somebody was compelled to vacate? And I think not only my client had a right to think, it wasn't until June 20th.
Can I ask you a quick question here? I mean, the order to vacate doesn't establish who has a right to possession. I mean, that's statutory, right?
Well, right.
I mean, the order to vacate is get out. That's execution of somebody's right. There's a difference between the two, right?
Well, of course, I agree.
Okay.
With that. But just basically what I think happened here was, quickly, there was, of course, the notice of your right to stay or the presumption to hold over. That's not an order. I don't think it would be a 523A6 violation that you don't say, oh, my goodness, my license is expired, I'm going to leave. Then the order to vacate from the probate court.
Why not? Why not? If you know that's happened, and you know you have no legal right to remain, and you deliberately stay on with that knowledge, why would that? Could that not be a 523A6 violation?
Well, two things. If we're talking about the right license, that doesn't say the converse when the license is up. You have no right. You might have rights such as you were in possession. And two arguments on that. If Your Honor is correct, then any defense of a suit at all, you have a logical reason to think you can defend yourself, and you defend yourself. Now you lose. That then becomes a tort. Not only that, it's a non-dischargeable tort. You could, for every UD case, you could argue that.
My hypothetical was, you know you're supposed to get out.
Yeah.
So in this case, he did. What was his challenge? His challenge the will, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And when was that disposed of?
Well, it was before that license. It was after the will was. That's another mistake in this case. That was when there was a final probate order that just asked the typical probate, please wind up and find everyone's rights. He wasn't named as a respondent or another party in that motion. And when it was granted, I think in March 26, 2020, it said, you know, so-and-so is the owner, so-and-so is this, but he must vacate. It didn't give a timeline. It just said he doesn't have a right. It said that. Now, the probate judge didn't think that was enough to get him evicted because it went up on appeal, and when it finally came down, the probate judge saw what was wrong with it. He hadn't been named as a party. It was just kind of findings of fact, really, of when a probate winds up. So the probate judge told Kelly, you better go file a UD case. And when they filed the UD case, then the UD judge said, that's not right either. You got to file a motion, an order to vacate. When they finally did that, and they finally got an order on June 20th, 22, now they have an order that you can argue you're compelled to obey. It says immediately vacate, and he doesn't leave. He left a little before the sheriff locked off, September 15th. So if there's damages at all, our argument is this from June 20th, 22 to September 15th. But to get back to Your Honor's question, I understand the point. Oftentimes you're sued for a UD case, for example, and you not paid the rent, and you know you're wrong, you missed the rent, and you better go. Now, they give a writ of execution. Nobody really leaves the rent notice 2 or 3 weeks later, and if they're smart, they move the day before. If that would be under 523A6 would be a tort that become non-dischargeable, Your Honor, this court would be inundated with such torts because there couldn't be a more common dispute and fact scenario in California courts than the UD courts, full of people who get orders to leave. None of them go the day after.
Well, the majority of those cases get dismissed because the tenant has absolutely no interest in prosecuting a bankruptcy case. Right? So we would not be inundated with 523A6.
Yeah, right. Well, maybe you wouldn't be inundated, but the ones, even if you do a kind of survey statistic of the ones that survive, you don't see any adversaries. I only found one case, unpublished case, that supports appellee. One in all of the USA, one case, and it actually only it distinguished between ejectment and UD. And I might really mention here, this was a summary judgment, so the presumptions are in our, was there a tribal issue? And in 523A6, you have the mental element of, you can intend to vindicate your rights, you can also intend to just, as the old saying goes, vex and annoy and bother, and you don't like them, and you're going to cause them damages. That second one is a necessary finding on 523A6. This is a summary judgment where that finding wasn't even listed in the list of undisputed facts. It wasn't found, it wasn't mentioned, and if it was, the presumptions, I think, in this case, even in front of an appellate court, still in our favor. I think there's a tribal issue of fact there. Secondly, my client, you know, if the judges themselves, if the probate judge didn't know it was, let's say, it should be eviction or should be vacate, and one's a tort and one's not, and even the Superior Court judge didn't do it, my client shouldn't be, sit there, no defendant acts like this. My goodness, you know, they're really right, because you often think that in a case, I'm just going to get up and leave. So I don't think that element's met. And a few other items is that this was all litigated in a way in front of the state courts. This really, what they're mad about is there was a lot of misfires. They didn't really get a proper enforceable order for a year or two because a probate judge made a bit of a mistake. He can't order someone out who was not named in the motion. He did it in his findings. He saw his mistake, and he said, no, go do a UD. The UD court said, no, that was wrong. Finally, when they got on track, none of this the fault of my client.
He's living there the whole time rent-free.
Pardon me?
He's living there rent-free.
Yes, that's right.
And what is the basis of him living there? That's the underlying problem here, isn't it?
Well, his basis is he was married to the person who died.
And he had 60 days after the final probate to get out.
After the final probate, well, perhaps, but the probate judge didn't think that. He thought his order was only findings.
No. That was as to the enforcement of getting out. What was his basis to stay, other than your peaceful possession? He had it.
Okay.
But why did he have it? Why was he entitled to be in there?
I'm focusing on, you know, at the end of the day, when people really, lawyers pore over this and go through the cases, they finally think, okay, he's not entitled. But I'm focusing on, like, the balloon above his head. What's he thinking? And that is, one, he might have known the rule that when you appeal a probate case, that's the only other automatic stay I know of in the law. When you appeal, it's generally, you get a stay. If a trustee is evicted in probate court and you appeal, that guy stays as trustee. Now, apparently,
but the stay, I think you're missing the point. Because you're staying the decision as to finality, ostensibly, in your argument. But what was he appealing that gave him the right to be there without paying the mortgage, without paying the rent, while other people are adjudicated to be the owner?
Well, two things. One is, he thinks, as most people would think, even lawyers would think, well, I'm fighting it, and they're not working, and it's misfiring, and judges are on my side a bit, and the judges are keeping me here, because the judge could give a writ of assistance that very day in front of the judge. You are defying my order. Here's a writ of assistance. Run to the sheriff. Get him out. tomorrow. So Your Honor's question seems to be like, if you're of legal mind and you've really pored over this, you'll see, oh, he's wrong. He's not thinking like that. He's like thinking like all the litigants that I'm fighting it.
He's also thinking that the person trying to kick him out of the house killed his wife, right?
I might mention that, yes, Your Honor. And I know it sounds, you know, outrageous and something you shouldn't say unless you really have evidence, but since you asked, and I know I'm bringing it up, but it's a pure legal issue, but under the litigation privilege, while you're in court, you can say that, and that cannot be a subsequent suit. And that's what this is, by the way. This is a subsequent suit.
He got sanctioned for that.
That's right.
That's a final order. That's the litigation privilege issue is gone because there's a final order sanctioning it.
Okay.
Partly for that.
Well, I'd agree with that and make another little comment about the phrase final order. If you're in front of a court and you don't like what's going on, you go and you ask for certain sanctions. You get a number. Now you come to this court, to the bankruptcy court. So now the only thing that should be litigated is dischargeability. The number's been fixed in the lower court. Why can you then go to the bankruptcy court? You know, I asked for a sanction for this, this, and this, the way that case was delayed under CP 128.7, equivalent of Rule 11. But I got some more I want. So I'm going to ask you, as part of the trial court, don't just determine dischargeability, but determine, give me more sanctions. It would be like if somebody got a Rule 911 sanction in an adversary. So it's post-petition. Afterwards, this guy goes to district court, the other lawyer.
Well, it would be like Cohen versus Delacruz, right?
Pardon me?
It would be like Cohen versus Delacruz, and when there are damages, you tally up all the damages. You don't stop because you're in a different court. Right.
Well, no, but if you had your bite at the apple, if you were talking about, really, I think it's equivalent to Rule 11, CCP 128, and when you go to that court, the lower court, and you get a certain number, I think you're stuck with it, and you come back and say, I want to relitigate and get higher. And I would, last thing, the person, this was somebody who was brain dead, and the lady says, pull the plug. Now, it's hyperbole, and you shouldn't say these words, but you told them to pull the plug. Oh, my goodness, it's murder. Okay, your court's right if we've missed the time limit on that. That would have been the litigation privilege, but I don't think it's quite so outrageous that he goes to another court and gets damages he could have got in the lower court. Thank you, Your Honor. I'll reserve the 223.
Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Ferris. May it please the Court, my name is Anthony Napolitano of Buckalter, appearing on behalf of the appellee, Roxana Chamier. Your Honor, there's a lot to unpack in the appellant's argument there and also in this case. One quote from the appellant's reply brief was quite striking. On page 29, he states, to quote what an appellate court judge once said to the appellant's counsel in another case, we are not interested in hearing Smith on bankruptcy law. We want to know if you have any authority supporting these arguments. I fear that what this panel just heard is nothing rooted in the facts of this case or in the applicable case law that governs 523A6 actions dealing with trespass. I'd like to first start with the timeline, and I'll be brief, Your Honor. My client's sister passed away in January 2018. For the better part of the next year and a quarter, the appellant litigated the issues of the will, had three separate counsels in the probate action, challenged the holographic will, and it was unequivocally determined that the will was valid, such that the appellant, and this is something that Mr. Smith has glossed over completely, made 17 damning admissions in this case that unequivocally established he had no right to be at the property. He admitted that my client owned the house as her sole and separate property prior to her sister's death. He admitted that the probate court determined that the house belonged to my client. He admitted that following the filing of the inventory, and that's really a procedural device to list all of the applicable assets within the probate estate, and it has significant consequences, and that's triggered by Section 6500 of the Probate Code. And he admitted that once that inventory was filed on August 29th, that by the statute, he had no right to live at that property following the expiration of the 60-day period. RFA 69, defendant admits he has no right to live at the property at any point in time after October 28th, 2019. Does he vacate? No. Does he pay rent? No. Does he pay the mortgage? No. That was RFA 81. Sorry, 82. RFA 81, he did not pay any property taxes. My client, once it was unequivocally determined by the probate court that she had the right to the property, he had no further right after October 29th, had to litigate this further. And that's where we get the what we call the vacate order, in which the probate court stated the defendant had no right to the property, must vacate the property. The property is titled in Roxanna's name. He appealed that order. And we heard today that there was a state pending appeal. First, that was never raised in the briefing before the bankruptcy court. That was raised at oral argument. And through the good fortune of having a laptop at present at the podium and Judge Blubond having access to her computer, that research was quickly done under Probate Code Section 1300 and 1310, and there was no stay applicable to this particular order. And the appellate court, the California State Appellate Court, even noted that when Mr. Brown appealed the probate order, the probate slash vacate order, and said the notice of appeal cited Code of Civil Procedure Section 917.4, which states that absent a bond, the perfecting of appeal does not stay enforcement of the judgment or order dealing with or directing the sale, conveyance, or delivery of possession of real property, which is a possession or control of the appellant. That is exactly what happened in this case. We have, and we didn't really even get into the 523A6 issues, we unequivocally have a willful injury and a malicious injury here. The admissions establish it, the bankruptcy court saw it, and the order was based on that. We have cases that we cited that deal with this. The Bakerfield versus Hughes Birch case, 499BR134, provides that when, and this was in a similar context, this was also a will contest where the debtor in that case was devised 3 of 11 acres of a ranch, and she failed to vacate the other remaining acres. And the court found that that constituted a willful injury and a malicious injury within the meaning of 523A6. These are the issues of this case. These are the facts of this case. The appellant doesn't like them. The appellant's counsel doesn't like them and has just summarily glossed over all of these issues with some kind of manufactured argument that there was confusion at the probate court level, that there was confusion thereafter, and that there was confusion at the bankruptcy court level. There was no confusion in this case, Your Honor, at all. My client obtained an ejectment judgment following the obtaining relief from stay. Mr. Smith says that, well, he should be collaterally stopped to the $15,000 in damages that was assessed, and we'll get to that in a moment. How is that even possible? Judge Ferris, you're out here in court in person, and you decide to put your house in Hawaii on VRBO. Someone moves in. They rent it for a week. They fail to leave. All of a sudden, you now have to go through a legal process. You then get an order of ejectment like we did here. You then have no idea how long it's going to take for the Sheriff's Department to exercise that order of ejectment. You have no idea how long the timing will take place in the litigation of that prior to even getting the ejectment. How can you obtain an order for damages without even knowing the duration or the extent of damage that may have been caused by waste or malicious injury to the property? You can't. And for the appellant's counsel to say that this was collaterally, that we were collaterally stopped from asserting a damages claim, is nonsensical. It's absolutely nonsensical. And the Supreme Court really provides great guidance on this. And this is the case, Archer versus Warner, 538 U.S. 314. It says, Congress intended to allow the relevant determination whether a debt arises out of fraud, for example, to take place in the bankruptcy court, not to force it to occur earlier in the state court at a time when non-dischargeability concerns are not directly an issue and neither party has a full incentive to litigate them. Your Honor, my client was damaged. It was clear that Mr. Brown had no right to live at the property from and after October 28th, 2019. We have asserted our damages. We have submitted 120 statements of undisputed facts. The defendant only contested 10 of them, and it was more of the same as, this isn't fair, this doesn't seem right, this can't be right. We have damages. We have been damaged. The judgment should be affirmed on appeal.
At what point, what date does the lost rent component of the damages run under the court's judgment?
November 1st, 2018.
Which is the vacate order, the 60 days.
Not the vacate order, it's the termination of the license.
Under the statute.
Okay. Section 6500 of the probate code.
Got it. Any more questions?
I'm fine.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you for
reopening the courthouse. It's wonderful to be back in person.
Nice to see everybody also.
Thank you, Your Honor. Counsel cited Hughes-Birch as the only case that supports him on this type of damage. That's what a trespass. The inheritance was a few parcels, and the person didn't get any damage for staying the parcels where she was in possession at the time. It was for divine an order that says, don't go on to the other parcels, trespass. And I've mentioned 523A6 requires a state court tort. What's the tort? It's not trespass. My client was in legal possession. He didn't have to be. It was a marital property. He didn't think he should be.
He wasn't in legal possession, was he? Because the court decided he didn't have a right to be there.
Well, he was.
Physical.
Physical, but he had. That's a property type right. If somebody came on the property, he could argue trespass. Nobody could walk on, including the appellee, until the sheriff delivered it. So he had some sort of estate and property being there.
Let's suppose somebody is wrongfully in possession of another person's property. Yeah. Isn't trespass the right cause of action for that? And if not, what is the right cause of action?
It is the right, but if you look at the cases even cited by appellee, the initial getting in possession has to be some sort of wrongful or tort. He was there, it was a marital property, he was married to the lady, but she left
it. Continuing possession that's wrongful in your mind doesn't change anything.
It would if there was a case. That's what I mentioned, the judge saying we don't want to hear Smith on law, but where's even one case, even supporting what Your Honor said, that it's a tort under 523A6 to remain? Let's say you're legally in possession because in this case it was marital property. Now they're fighting about it, and you don't move. Where is there a tort? Where is there even one published case like this one that
there's a statute that says you got 60 days and then you're gone?
Well, it doesn't say that. It says...
Of course it does. Okay.
Okay, well, it says you have a license to stay 60. When the 61st day comes, you may have another argument for possession. And I don't... Do you think this is a... This was done summary judgment, so there's been no tribal issue of fact that what litigant would say, my goodness,
your argument, for possession is you haven't kicked me out yet. It's not that I get to stay.
Yeah, but the law says that you still have some rights because you have not kicked me out yet, and I was there legally because it was our marital property. She left it to someone else. I'm saying where's the case? Where's the case that says it's a tort that I will hang around until you determine that the will was no good, till I finally, on appeal, there's a proper order. Had they done it right, they would have had an order, that last order. They could have had it years later, but it misfired quite a few times. Not my client's fault, and they're very angry, and they won.
You've already overseen your time, but thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you, Aaron.
The matter is submitted.